Hey there, welcome into another episode of the Bandwagon Sports Podcast. I'm Brian Moldeen.
I am not Lisa Brooks. I'm no. John Steinbacher. So Lisa usually goes second.
And I'm the intern, Roger Blanco.
Once again, as John told you, we are Lisa-less today. She has been back here at the station, you know, in between the last two episodes, but
she is in Las Vegas at a conference, a technology conference for public media, PBS in specific.
So yes, indeed.
Update on that.
I'm sure she's enjoying the weather out there much more than we are enjoying the weather here in Illinois.
I'm sure she is, though. I assume if she's anything like me when I go to conferences, she's spending a lot of time in an overly air-conditioned room.
With wonderful fluorescent lighting.
Yes.
All right. Well, Lisa will be back for our next episode, so don't worry about that. But we've got a fun episode on the way here today. Our special guest this week is Charlie Young. He is in charge of baseball analytics for the University of Illinois Fighting Illini baseball team, just getting involved with that this season. We'll have an interesting conversation with Charlie coming up here a little bit later. Controversy this week has to be with players and spending maybe more time than they should in the minor leagues. In particular, one Tommy Pham, outfielder for the St. Louis Cardinals, not too pleased about the way he's been treated by the organization. We'll talk about that coming up, our usual status update as well. But first, let's talk about some news of the week. NCAA men's and women's basketball tournaments wrapping up. I would say, at least in the Final Four, the women's tournament was the one that had the better games for sure.
Oh, yeah. The men's tournament, I guess the
the Kansas-Duke game was very
Kansas-Duke
good.
Kansas-Duke game was pretty good, yeah, up until the last couple minutes. But otherwise, nice to see Loyola make the Final Four. But I guess Sister Jean ran out of mojo.
Yeah, no match for Mo Wagner and the Wolverines, who in turn were no match for Villanova.
Well, they were for about 10 minutes.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, that game was not even close, which I was pretty happy about because I won both my leagues.
Oh, congratulations to you. I came in last in both of mine. Last.
Well, I picked the champion correct, but I had so much other stuff wrong that I finished like in fifth in our station.
I don't remember if I've said this before, but I imagine Jalen Brunson is probably very disappointed that he chose to go to Villanova over Illinois.
I'm sure he's heartbroken.
Yeah.
I think he's done all right for himself. AP Player of the Year, two national titles. He's
probably
doing okay.
Yeah. Probably a place is maybe the most successful, not best, but most successful college basketball player of the last 20 years.
Yeah.
I mean, all things considered.
I think that's probably about right. As far as that women's tournament goes, Notre Dame gets not one, but two last-second shots from guard Arike Ogunbowale. The first one to beat previously unbeaten UConn.
Right, that was an interesting game because Notre Dame was ahead, and then they blew like a 5-point lead in the last 12 seconds or something like that. And then won it in overtime, and
that was pretty amazing. And then she did the same thing again against Mississippi State, hitting a shot that left 1/10 of a second on the clock after they went back and looked at it. But just an amazing Final Four, and
her shot against Mississippi State, right?
Yeah.
It was a great shot. It was off balance, and it just sort of hung in the air for a while. I shared a shot of you guys, but it was like in slow motion from behind the baseline, and you can see her take the shot, and then the ball like goes out of the frame, and it's in slow motion, but it's a really long time it's out of the frame, and then like comes back in. So a really high arching kind of, I'm sure if I didn't watch it live, but I'm sure if you were a Notre Dame fan, or a Mississippi State fan, it felt like an eternity while it was in the air.
Oh, for sure. Did you get a chance to watch either of those games, Roger?
Yes, I did see the Mississippi State game, which was wild, and that like broke the internet because every athlete was just tweeting just how crazy that shot was. I know I remember Dwayne Wade went crazy. I think he shared a video or something like that, and just how to just back-to-back buzzer beaters and probably the biggest games of your life. That's just unheard of.
Doesn't get much better than that.
And she was having a terrible shooting game otherwise, right?
Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah, she was not having a good game there. But, I think that more than makes up for it.
Yeah, and it's kind of nice to see, just because they're the same weekend, the men's Final Four usually severely overshadows the women's Final Four. And this year, because of the games, because of the shots, I think the women's Final Four gets a little more buzz, especially after sort of the 20-point slog of the men's final.
Yeah, yeah, Villanova winning 79-62 in that one, and really the second half of the game was never in doubt. Major League Baseball got underway here in the past week. That season has started. Kind of a slow start for Cubs, Cardinals, and Sox, really. Yeah. None of the three really off to a great start. I think expected for the Sox this year.
Yeah, this year. Next year will be good.
It's early.
It is early. So we'll see how the Cubs and Cardinals fare in that National League Central race going along. Also,
U of I men's basketball, I think it's the last time we talked. I don't remember if... They have a lot of transfers.
Yes.
LeRon Black is going pro. I don't know if that happened. Michael Finke is going to transfer. Tijon Lucas. Mm-hmm. So, you know, those are some pretty big expected pieces for next year. But in that time, I think they may have gotten three or four commitments, including just yesterday from Tevion Jones.
Tevion Jones, yeah, four-star recruit. Small forward, 6'6", he's listed. He one heck of an athlete. I saw a lot of his videos yesterday after he committed, and Illini basketball's on the rise. Next year should be a pretty good season for them.
And I hope you're a fan of Trent Frazier or Kipper Nichols, because otherwise you're going to have to learn a lot on your name.
Yeah, maybe Aaron Jordan will get some playing time again next year off the bench as well. But yeah, a lot of new faces coming in for Illinois basketball for sure.
We also wanted to mention men's football, Illinois football.
Oh, yes, we did. Yes. I can't believe I forgot this.
Because they managed to get their first five-star recruit since Aurelius Ben, I believe, or maybe even farther back. And he's Isaiah Williams. He's a QB plus from the St. Louis area. I think there's discussion, right, Roger, whether he actually will play QB or...
Yeah, I think he's like 5'10", 5'11". I think he's like a QB and an athlete. So we'll see where he goes. Wouldn't be a bad wide receiver. I've seen a couple tapes of his, and that guy can fly.
So very exciting time for U of I football, actually. Considering the last couple of years, the recruiting has been a little slow. It's really picked up, and it's picked up around the theme Littyville.
Yes.
You might have seen that if you follow Illinois football at all or Illinois sports. They talk about Littyville, and I sort of kind of had an idea for what it meant, but I had to ask Roger because I am over 35. So, Roger, why don't you tell us exactly what it possibly means? And then when I was looking, I went down a rabbit hole of a U of I fan form, and I'll read some of these. Or maybe should I read these first?
Yeah, you go ahead, yeah.
All right, I'll read these. And, you know, no offense to anyone who may be listening who actually made these comments, because I understand, but the first person was like, I don't know, I'm the only one here who probably hasn't answered this, but where does Littyville come? And then, let's see, here's one answer. I understand the 314 to the 217 area code thing, but Littyville I've seen elsewhere. Litty is the nickname for Thaddeus Ward. I'm not sure it is. Liddy is a rap song by Meek Mill. Pretty sure that's where it started. Kids say the good things are lit these days, so we are the Ville of cool things. It's about creating a brand, y'all. We will win is sort of weak sauce. We don't have a lot to hang our hats on, so just go with it. Littyville isn't for the fans anyway. When I do something my kids really like, they say, that's lit, meaning that it's hot. Good. Lit equals hot. Ville equals city town. So Littyville is telling recruits Shambana is heating up and good things are expected from it. Anyway, it goes on and on, but
awesome.
Yeah, so if you want to have some fun, go to some recruiting forums and look at old people like me trying to figure out what Littyville means. But yeah, Roger, I think we kind of get the idea from some of those responses, but...
Well, yeah, like, kids my age or even younger, just saying lit, just like asking like, oh, how's the party? Oh, it's lit. We should go.
Yeah.
I feel like this is a good, like, thing, like brand to start off, because they're recruiting people that are coming out of high school. They're trying to relate to them. So if it seems like it's working, so.
Yeah, and it seems like it probably sort of like came out of a natural thing. Probably the players like started it or something like that. I don't think Lovie Smith was like, Let's start branding ourselves. In, yeah. But apparently he has a hat.
He has
now,
a
right?
hat. Yes, he does. Yes, he does.
Yeah, and if you want to see another older white guy talk about Liddyville, Bob Osmussen had a column about Liddyville.
Oh, yeah. We'll have to link to that, too.
In a recent edition of the News Gazette. I love Bob. He's one of the nicest guys I've ever worked with in my life, but it's just amusing with the forum. It's amusing to have older white guys writing about Liddyville.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't really get it. I knew enough not to start asking around in a place. But, you know. It happens. It happens to all of us. Eventually, we're the people who are wondering what the kids are saying these days.
Yes. And Roger, we're glad we have you here to tell us what they're saying these days.
I will teach you.
Enjoy it, because it goes quick.
And this podcast, of course, is lit right now, and it's going to get even more lit when we bring in Charlie Young to talk about baseball analytics here. That's coming up next on The Bandwagon. More and more, you're hearing about data analytics being a part of baseball, especially at the major league level, but now even at the college level as well. The University of Illinois baseball team has brought analytics into their program this year, and we're talking to the guy behind those analytics, Charlie Young. He's a sophomore computer science and astronomy major at the University of Illinois, now working with the Fighting Illini baseball team. Hey, Charlie, it's great to have you here.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
How did this come about? How did you get involved with the baseball team?
Yeah, so I was interested in baseball analytics kind of coming into college, and actually it's a kind of funny story. I bought some books. I was getting more and more interested in it, and I read that an emeritus professor at Illinois, Alan Nathan, was doing this research, and I had never heard of him before I was reading the book. So I got kind of curious, and I thought, oh, well, if there's a world-renowned baseball physicist working on campus, I should go talk to him if I'm going to get serious about doing this for a full-time job. So I reached out to him to kind of see what he's doing, maybe if the team has reached out to him, because he's a great resource to have, having him on a college campus. And he said he's been in contact with the coaches to buy some machinery to get more analytics, more stats. And I thought that was really cool. So he put me in contact with the coaches about this time last year, and it kind of went from there. I did a few projects for them in the spring, and then this past August we got the FlightScope machine, which gives us a bunch of metrics similar to StatCast and MLB. I got involved with that, and then my job since then has been kind of working with the FlightScope and getting reports to the coaches.
Now, if I understand correctly, didn't you do a little work with the Cincinnati Reds last year as well?
I did, yeah. I went to an analytics conference in Phoenix last year, met the Cincinnati Reds guys, and they took an interest in what I was doing, and I did some consulting off-site for them last summer.
Awesome.
Can you walk us through or just generally talk about what your machine/software does for Illinois baseball and how you've implemented it and the response?
Yeah, so the FlightScope machine is similar to TrackMan, which is half of MLB's StatCast metrics that you see during the game or on Baseball Savant, the website, where basically it gets spin rate, velocities of batted balls or pitched balls, release points, where it crosses the plate, and things like that. So my job, along with our grad assistant Cam Wells, is we set up the FlightScope behind home plate during games and in a cage or bullpen whenever we have practice. And we set it up and we hook up a Microsoft Surface to the machine, and we track when a pitch comes in, we track what pitch it was, what the result of the pitch was, and then similar to the batted ball. It gives us all these metrics, and then from there, I export it as a CSV and email it to myself. And then being a computer science major, the other part of my job is building the software behind it to kind of generate reports, store the data for the coaches. So my three kind of jobs are to operate the FlightScope during games, practices, build the software behind it, and then generate reports to send to the coaches before a series or during practice whenever they kind of ask for it.
You're talking about metrics. How do you think these metrics have changed the game and how we look at baseball now?
It's numbers have been everywhere since, 2002, the Billy Bean Oakland days, Moneyball kind of started the whole thing. But no, numbers have been around in the game in Major League Baseball for a while. Teams are starting to look into it more and more, build their analytics programs. And since it's so ubiquitous in Major League Baseball with the TrackMan and StatCast being implemented in all the stadiums, it's easy for Major League teams to get all this data to make reliable decisions and do their job. But for college, it's a little difficult because not all college teams have this kind of data, these kind of machines to work with. So I think it's starting to trickle in to college baseball. I really think that within the next 5-10 years, a lot more teams will have it than just a couple of big SEC teams, a couple of Iowa has a TrackMan. So, yeah, I think it'll be more used in college baseball. It's tough because they're in and out 3-4 years, so you can't do a lot of projections like that. But just for training purposes, I think it's a great resource to have.
Yeah, and I'm curious, you know, what was the coach's response when you started talking to them about trying to implement some of this stuff? Not all, you know, coaches are as receptive to this kind of analytical data as others are, but what was, you know, Dan Hartlib and his staff, what was their reaction?
Yeah, they've been totally great in terms of hearing the reports, hearing and reading the reports that I give them. They've been invested in it. Obviously, we purchased the FlightScope machine. That was independent of me, so I had nothing to do with that kind of conversation. They kind of did it on their own. And then I took over working with it, and they've been really great. If we're like during the winter when we have indoor scrimmages, I would be working the machine, and let's say a ball's hit into the rafters where it gets hit and we don't know how far it would have gone, they would turn to me and ask how far it went, kind of the launch angle, and then I would tell them, and then they would put guys on base accordingly because obviously the ball didn't travel that far. But they've been great. I send them reports, they read them, and it's a really great mutual relationship.
So knowing that this is sort of the first year plus that U of I baseball is using this information, and it sounds like what you do is you provide the reports to the coaches and they take that information to the players. How has the learning process been? Do you feel like the coaches and the players are all familiar with this and able to use it, or has there been sort of a learning curve in terms of, I mean, everyone in baseball sort of, I think probably at this point, knows what a spin rate and a launch angle are, but maybe they don't exactly know the right way to change those things or stuff like that?
Yeah, so it's been a work in progress right now because I go to all the home games and a few of the away games. So we have 8 or 9 games so far this season recorded. And so there isn't too much data there yet, but, I mean, the players have been interested in it. They ask me sometimes where their velocity was sitting at, kind of where what their spin axis look like on their pitch. Batters ask me their launch angles, how far this went, like in the cage or something like that. So the players have been involved. They kind of like what I've been doing. And overall, yeah, I think everyone's starting to kind of learn about what this data means. I mean, in the college game, it's tough to see kind of what's reliable game to game. And I think it's a little different from Major League Baseball in terms of just how much data you have to make data-driven decisions. But I think it's getting there. And I think by the time we get enough season data for next year, I think we'll hit the ground running and kind of go from there.
With all this, do you think with you tracking these metrics is in like correlation to this year's success for the team? Because I know they're having a very, very good season.
For sure, yeah. I wouldn't credit all of the success I've been doing. Obviously, the players have been playing out of their mind and the coaches have been doing their job great. I don't know. I like to think that I've helped a little bit in terms of giving the coaches kind of reports before series. Giving our guys answers to whenever they ask what they've been doing, I can tell them, and I like to think that helps them. So, yeah, we've been doing great, but it's a lot on the players and the coaches.
Speaking of the players, you mean you're not going to take all the credit for the season Brent Spillane is having?
Oh, he's been unbelievable this season, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. You know, and you mentioned, you know, that you did some work for the Reds last year. It sounds like you've got another thing lined up for this summer as well.
Yep, I'm working for the Baltimore Orioles as an analytics intern in their front office. So I'm going out the week after school ends. I'll come back probably the week before school starts, and I'll be working with Sarah, their director, to kind of just, for me, it's a good experience to have a broad range of topics, software development, analytics, and also see how a front office works. And hopefully I can go into it full time.
I have a question just about data analytics in general and maybe more specifically to the U of I baseball team. But obviously with a team like the Orioles or in Major League Baseball, we have a lot of data, you have a lot of coaches, and maybe players understand how to use the information a little better. But I still wonder if this is a concern that you get too wrapped up in, say, exit velocity or something like that. You know, there was a Daily Illini article, which I'm sure we'll link to, which, you know, did a really nice job of talking about what you did. And you talked about two players sort of competing with each other. Mm-hmm. Is there a concern that you get too locked into this stuff and maybe lose sight of sort of the just, you know, day-to-day, you know, overthink it, I guess.
Yeah, so I wouldn't say there's too much of that. I kind of talked to the coaches, and we agreed when I generate a report, I kind of give it to the coaches, and then they can decide what to teach the players, what to talk about, because we don't want, I think it's the same on the major league level, we don't want to tell the players every single stat that they have because they might try to overcorrect and might get in their head a little bit. So there is a separation between my data and the players. It kind of goes for the coaches first, but I think that's a good buffer to stop the overcorrecting, stuff like that. So I think it's working out pretty well so far.
What do you think is the best stat out there, or like one that really just stands out, or like not many people know about?
Ooh, yeah. I mean, spin axis on a pitch is one of them. It's kind of like a clock where through which axis the ball rotates. You can see if you're throwing a slider, it's like 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock on a clock scale, and if you got home run absolutely bombed off one of your sliders, you can see, oh, if my spin axis wasn't where it should have been, that explains it, and then the coaches can work to try to make that more consistent so you get the right break you want on your pitches. And then obviously the exit velocity launch angle craze has been happening for a while. I think those are good metrics. You can use even more to like estimate what your like on-base average would have been given those parameters. I think that's another thing coming up. But yeah, spin axis has definitely been interested to me.
This is a question I think people like you always get asked, so I'm going to ask it. Knowing all the analytics and launch angles and using technology for baseball, are you able to enjoy a baseball game? Or are you constantly thinking about all the analytics and regressions? And
yeah, I mean, I still enjoy baseball. It's a great sport to watch. When I'm working the home games, I have to look down at my surface and I chart every pitch. But I mean, I'm still there watching baseball, watching our team. And then for one of the games that I went to where we didn't have the machine for whatever reason, I don't remember why, but I sat there and it was awesome to watch our team without having to look at anything else, obviously, because I give my full attention to them. But yeah, it's still awesome to watch baseball. I get to go there to all of our games, and it's been a great experience.
Now, I did notice, you know, in addition to computer science, you're also an astronomy major.
I am.
So what do you think you might do with that degree?
Yeah, so coming into college, I thought I would go to grad school to do astrophysics. My dream is to work at NASA coming out of high school. And then I got involved with baseball analytics, and I want to go that route full time. But I still like the taking astrophysics courses. I TA for the astronomy department, so I help out students observe at the observing dome on campus. So it's a hobby for me, and I enjoy studying it. And with the physics that I learned taking the astronomy part of my degree, it's helped model things with Alan Nathan when he's a baseball physicist. So I would say I have more of the physics background than the average baseball analyst. So going into that helps me baseball-wise. But also talking to my advisor, he says a lot of stuff that I'm doing, exit velocities, building websites and models behind that, is similar to what they do in astronomy. So I think it's a good pairing, which I didn't see coming into college at all.
Awesome. Charlie Young is a sophomore at the University of Illinois, double major in computer science and in astronomy, and the guy behind the analytics for the University of Illinois Fighting Illini baseball team. Charlie, great talking with you today.
Thanks. Thanks, guys.
It is time for controversy, and yours truly has the honor of picking out our controversy this week. Certainly a lot of ways we could have gone, maybe, but something that caught my eye here in the last couple of days, and it really goes back to last season. The St. Louis Cardinals have an outfielder, Tommy Pham, who really had a breakout season for them a year ago, put up some of the best numbers in Major League Baseball, despite not really starting to play every day until May because of some injuries to the team. And, you know, Pham, 29 years old, so he really didn't get significant playing time till he was 28. And some of that had to do with injuries, but some of that had to do, at least he thinks, with being disrespected and kind of pigeonholed by the Cardinals organization. You know, I think a lot of teams do this with players that they, you know, they want to hold on to. They know that they're valuable pieces. The Cubs, I think, notably did that a couple years ago with Tommy La Stella, who still had minor league options left, so he could be sent down to the minor leagues without the team risking losing him to another franchise. And certainly Pham had that happen on several occasions as well. He'd been up for a little bit in 2015 and 2016 without really getting much traction. But Pham did an interview with Sports Illustrated, guys, where he really did not, mince any words about the way he was treated. This goes back actually about 4 years. He said after he was leapfrogged by some guys who had bigger names in the organization, Steven Piscotty, Randall Grichuk, Oscar Tavares. Of course, Tavares dying in a tragic car accident a couple of years ago. Grichuk and Piscotty are both no longer with the Cardinals. He says he called the farm director of the Cardinals and demanded his release, saying, "You know what? I'm the best mother blanker on this team, and you guys don't even know it." I said those exact words. They told me that things happen. I'll get some at-bats. I just had to wear it. Well, he did wear it. It took him a while to get back up, but he put up some of the best numbers in baseball last year. So it's interesting how this kind of works. You know, teams will manipulate service time. Cubs notably did that with Chris Bryant a few years ago by keeping him in the minor leagues for about 10 or so games, so they had him under another year of control through 2021 instead of 2020. You certainly understand why teams do things like that, but you wonder if at some point, you know, the Players Association or somebody might kind of rebel against that, try and get some maybe better treatment for some of their younger guys in the next collective bargaining agreement.
Well, I would imagine this would be a priority, especially after the Chris Bryant thing, and that got a lot of publicity. But I think what we're actually, you know, the controversy you're speaking to is players who maybe aren't Chris Bryant, where you save them for 3 weeks and send them down to the minors, but players who are more major league talent, but maybe not quite superstars. And I think, I don't know exactly how many options you have to go up and down, but we see teams use this a lot where clearly, and I think in Tommy Pham's case, but in other cases as well, where clearly you have a player who's probably better suited for playing on the major league team, but they have minor league options. And if you have minor league options, you can go down to the minor leagues for a while. And if you don't have minor league options, then you have to clear waivers, which means other teams can pick you up. So it gets complicated, as you said, but I do think, you know, lots of teams are using this probably not the way it was intended, and I'm sure the next collective bargaining agreement for Major League Baseball, which is going to be a lot of fun if you're a fan. If you're of protracted possible strikes, it's really going to be a blast. But teams are playing within the rules, but not really the spirit of the law, what am I saying?
Yeah. I'm not sure what you think about this, Roger, but Tommy Pham certainly. I think the interesting thing here is that, you know, most of the time younger guys who come up, you know, usually don't say a lot to the media. They just kind of keep their head down and go. But Pham's really just speaking his mind here.
Yeah. While he's saying this, I wonder if how the clubhouse feels. Like, you know, is there going to be some tension or something like that? He said, he quoted, "You can't blank about it, because if you blank about it, you blank up the team." So, which he has a valid point, because if you bring up something to the media, not to the clubhouse, there's going to be stuff going on within the locker room, and you want that team chemistry. So we'll see how the Cardinals hold up throughout the season.
Yeah, and it's interesting, too. I think the Cardinals did offer him a two-year contract extension that I think would have essentially bought out some of his arbitration years, and he turned it down. He'll be eligible for arbitration for the first time next year. And I mentioned the numbers he put up last year in 128 games, so he missed about a month before they called him up. He hit 23 homers, stole 25 bases, .306 batting average, .411 on base, and .520 slugging percentage. He finished 11th in the MVP voting and 7th in the National League in the statistic wins above replacement, or WAR for short. Did that basically without a month on. So certainly one of the best players in the National League last year.
Yeah, and I think he's got a bone to pick.
He does indeed. So we'll see. He's really betting on himself, hoping that he puts up similar numbers this year so that his arbitration case next year results in some good money for him. We'll see how he does. But we'll definitely link to that Tommy Pham article. Well worth a read, because you just don't often see players unload like this.
Right. And you mentioned Tommy La Stella, who a couple years ago just kind of, instead of going to the minor leagues, just sort of stopped playing. And it was kind of a weird thing going on for the Cubs for a while. And again, I think part of it is the player, part of it is the clubhouse. I mean, what does that do for the clubhouse, especially if you have another player who's staying up there and you're leaving because of it? I don't know. Complicated.
Complicated indeed. So, yeah, that's our controversy for this week. A look at Major League Baseball and surface time through the eyes of one Tommy Pham. All right, time for our status update here this week, where we tell you what's caught our eye on social media. Who wants to go first this week?
I can go first. And it seems like it has been a while since we've been on the podcast airwaves. So this story is actually a little bit old, but since we've been on, the University of Maryland, Baltimore County,
yes.
Pulled off the biggest upset in the history of men's NCAA basketball tournament. They were a 16 seed, and they upset Virginia. I believe it happened once on the women's side as well. But what I wanted to talk about was the Twitter account, because what happened was, I think even before the game started or right before, the Seth Davis, who I think writes for The Athletic and does CBS Sports commentary, has a thing where he writes Sharpie when he thinks the team is going to win. He usually does it pretty late. I mean, it's not like the most daring thing. As I've followed him, he usually does it when things are well within, obviously, the team winning. So he'll say, like, you know, during the championship, probably sometime in the second half, he said Villanova Sharpie. But he said Virginia Sharpie, which means he was saying Virginia was going to win. There was no chance that UMBC was going to win. UMBC's Twitter writer, author, I don't know what the heck you call him, Twitterer. Who was some guy, I'll have to link the article, was some guy who doesn't always do it, but was doing it for the game, really glommed onto that, especially as the game went farther along and it became very clear that Virginia was not running away with it. He did it's one of those things where you kind of accidentally have a moment of the spotlight and you make the most of it. He did a really great job, a lot of funny tweets, had a lot of fun with it, and good to see Seth Davis take it with a little bit of good humor.
Yes, indeed. All right, very good. What you got, Roger?
After the Villanova winning the championship game, Dante DiVincenzo, we all know he scored 31 points, but someone went through his Twitter account and they found some screenshots back in the day from like 2011, something like that, which drew a lot of controversy because it had like a lot of racial slurs and stuff
wow.
like that. Yeah,
I didn't know about that.
And he claims he did not do it or something along the lines. And the university said he deleted the account, but just for that, like, he's still a college player. I know he's not going to be a pro next year. Well, he probably will in the future. But just going down, I guess, through someone's old Twitter account, they don't know what they're doing when they're 12, 13 years old. So and that just reminds me of the Mitchell Trubisky situation, how he got drafted.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he says some things. So just that really caught my eye. Just, I don't know, how are you going to bash, a player after playing the best game of his life?
Well, yeah, and I guess I haven't seen what he said. It sort of depends on how far he went. But I think it's interesting. That's a good point. I'm surprised that when you play for a team like Villanova or even any major college basketball team, there's not, like, someone when you come in who says, like, let's go through all your old Twitter accounts or, something like that where, I mean, I know they get coached on doing post-game interviews and stuff like that, but it seems like in this day and age, social media is part of it. So you'd think someone would have, and maybe because of this, they'll do it in the future. But especially when you're going into college, like, let's take a look at all your Twitter feed and see if we might not want to delete some stuff. Because I know there are software out there that will just go through and delete your whole Twitter feed. But I don't know.
Yeah. But just the people that just take their time and go back look at all that,
It's the world we live in, unfortunately. But, yeah, no, that's interesting. I didn't know about that.
Yes, it is. And I think I'm going to pass one on behalf of Lisa this week. There was just an insane goal
in
Major League Soccer this past week. Zlatan Ibrahimovic, who's a new player for the LA Galaxy, he'd been in Europe for a long time, one of the best players on the continent for a long time before coming over to LA this year. He hit a goal from maybe 5 yards past midfield, where it was a long pass to him. He just took it on one bounce, a half volley, perfectly over the goalkeeper's head and into the net from, it must have been 50 yards out. I mean, it was just an insane shot. We're definitely going to link to it.
Wasn't that his first game for the Galaxy?
Yeah, his debut, yeah.
Yeah, his debut, and he helped the Galaxy come back. Like, I think they were down 3-0, and they won 4-3. I think that goal that I'm talking about tied the game at 3-3, and he scored another one for them to win it 4-3. That's a pretty good debut right there.
Yeah, I think they were chanting his name during that, too. So, like, I guess he's like, you know what? Let me show you something. And
That's funny because when I saw the replay, when you're watching, and I guess I didn't have the sound, but I kind of like, what are you doing? You know, you see him, like, and he's, like, about, there's no one to pass it to, and he's about to kick it. And you're like, are you going to shoot from there? And then he does, and you're like, no. I see.
That was an absolute missile. That was wow.
Yeah, that was an amazing goal. So we'll definitely link to that one for you as well. So that is, I think that's all we've got for you today. Thanks again to Charlie Young for joining us here on this broadcast.
Bright future for that Charlie Young.
Yes, indeed. We'll say we knew him when. And Lisa will be back with us next time as well. So be sure to join us for that. But first, we have some credits.
Yes. We want to thank you for joining us on the bandwagon. We want to thank you very, very much. Bandwagon is a production of Illinois Public Media. This episode was produced by Brian Moline, Lisa Brawlich, John Steinbacher, and myself, Roger Blanco. Extra large thanks to this episode's special guest, Charlie Young. Regular thanks goes to Scott Cameron, Jim Kelly, Mike Bowman, and musical genius Automatic Empire, who wrote and performed our theme and other music heard within. Find us on the web at will.illinois.edu/bandwagon, where you can stream us again and again and click all the links and stuff. Better yet, subscribe to Bandwagon and rate it in iTunes. Ratings equals discovery and search because algorithms. No iTunes, no problem. You can find us in Stitcher and NPR One, and we're always working on being available in other places. Follow us on Twitter at BNDWGN. PDCST, all consonants, no vowels to get our tweets. Please add us. We love it when you do. We'll be back in a couple weeks for another episode about the often strange and always compelling intersections between sports and everything else under the sun. Until then, thanks for playing.